Fraser got here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
Hey, look at that, the missing evidence in the Kellner case. My God, he was innocent.
He has to. By law, you're entitled. It's called disclosure, you jerk.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a film and TV show where a bunch of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about various films and TV shows. I'm Marcus E. Acco, and my favorite female heroine is Zoe, played by Gina Torres from the show Firefly.
And I'm Laura Sampson, and my favourite TV and movie heroine is Elle Woods from Legally Blonde, played by Reese Witherspoon.
And with us tonight, our special guest, the hardest working production manager that we know. Please tell us your name and your favourite female heroine.
My name's Ariana Ryan, and I think my favourite female TV heroine would be CJ Craig from The West Wing.
Oh, good call.
I know, good, eh? Yeah.
I got into West Wing, and I stuck with West Wing because I fell into it literally. Mainly because of Rob Lowe. He was the person who pulled me into that show. I started watching it, and then I started picking up these different characters: C.J. Craig, Toby Ziegler, and then obviously President Bartlett. Right now, I liked Martin Sheen. I hadn't seen him in quite a while, and then he popped up in that, and I stuck with that show to its finality because of Aaron Sorkin's script. Now, CJ Craig, I could easily swap her for let me phrase properly. I could swap my favorite heroine, Gina Torres, mm-hmm. with CJ Craig. However, have you seen Firefly?
No.
Zoe kicks good butt, right? She's basically
like physically,
physically, mentally, I'll explain. I'll just give you a quick rundown mm-hmm. of what the show is. It's basically smugglers in space, right? And it's a crew of smugglers called they're on a ship called Serenity, set in the future, and they're captained by Captain Mal Reynolds, played by Nathan Fillion, who you might know him from the show Castle and some from a TV show, sitcom way back in the day called Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Yeah.
And she...
Oh, God, I love that.
There you go. Gina Torres, Zoe, plays his second in command. And literally, if he steps down, she's the person who steps up and everybody's afraid of her because she is that much of a hardcore character. That's why she's my favorite. Plus, it doesn't help that she looks as good as she does.
Yeah, I get that. But, I mean, CJ Craig, right?
Yes, okay. Like, go on.
Dealing in the press room, coming up with stuff immediately. Do you remember that episode where she was given the cartographers who wanted to do the whole different map thing, upside down thing? Remember her incredulity about that? Bringing it, like, this is just...
Yes. Don't get me wrong. And Aaron Sorkin puts, Aaron Sorkin just basically put words into, just mm-hmm. filled CJ Craig and made CJ Craig a very witty, intelligent, strong character. And what was the actress that played CJ Craig again?
Allison Janney.
Well done. Good pull.
I know, right?
And she knocks it out of the park because not a lot of people can handle Aaron Sorkin dialogue. She's fantastic as well, so I like that. Laura,
what is it they can't handle about it?
Here's the thing. The trope about Aaron Sorkin TV shows is basically people are walking and talking. Now, you might think, oh, it's easy. Anyone can walk and talk. Not anyone can walk and talk and spit the same kind of dialogue that Aaron Sorkin writes. It's highly complex. I listen to it to make myself feel intelligent. I will be completely honest with you. That's why I started watching The West Wing, because it made me feel intelligent. And I do a little bit of writing myself. And basically what I do is I write and I say, okay, how close to... If I were to compare it, and I will never be as good as Aaron Sorkin. I put, as my writing heroes, I put Aaron Sorkin up there. I put Joss Whedon up there. I will never be as good as those two. I always say, is my writing at least a third as good as what they write because of how good it is? And that's the reason why it's very difficult to do Aaron Sorkin dialogue while walking. The trope is,
have you tried it as an actor as well?
Yes, and because you have to plot, because you're thinking about the next thing you have to say. You have to react as an actor because you're not just parroting dialogue. You have to act as well. And everyone on West Wing, they were just fantastic. Alison Janney as well, carrying C.J. Craig, fantastic as that character. I'll tell you what, I will lend you my copy of West Wing, and you'll see just one episode. Watch one episode and you see exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I know. I mean, it all just, in the West Wing, it all just sort of rolls along and it just sounds wonderful. I don't really think about it in the same way as you do as a screenwriter. So it's really good to get that insight
there. That's true. And again, the reason Firefly, I told you, two of my top two writers, Joss Whedon and Aaron Sorkin. Joss Whedon wrote Firefly.
Did he do Buffy the Vampire?
He did do Buffy the Vampire, which Gina Torres is not in Buffy. She's in Angel, but we'll talk about that later on. so you're absolutely right. Buffy, I'd put her high up on the list, but she doesn't. Unfortunately, she doesn't beat Zoe, in my opinion.
I never saw Buffy. I was a big Dawson's Creek person.
Okay, fair.
I saw both.
Yeah, both or maybe neither might be coming up on the show later on. I'll just put that as a teaser out there. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
And with us today, our special guest is Ariana Ryan.
Hi.
Okay, so coming up on the show today, we're going to be doing our film and TV discussion. I will give you a little shout out as to what that is later on. We'll also discuss UK box office top five, as well as giving a Netflix and Amazon recommendation. But first, in a little change to film and TV news, we'll be doing something slightly different, but we'll just call it film and TV news. Okay, so instead of film and TV news this week, I figured we'll change the pace a little bit and do a little bit of a, not necessarily competition, because I don't want to foster any rivalry between you two ladies, because you've just met. I don't want to foster rivalry between the two of you. However, I will throw a little bit of competition your way. I was online researching for the show, and I came across a website called Ranker.com. And what they do on that site is they basically put out polls to various viewers of television, film, and entertainment, etc. And the people who subscribe or visit the website, they get to vote on their favorite or top this, top that, and so on. So you have, for example, the top rated horror movie, or the top rated comedy, top rated romantic character, top rated villain, etc. And I looked and the topic caught my eye, the top hottest shows on television. So I figured I might as well bring that topic into today's show. So I went through and I looked at the top 20 hottest TV shows as voted for by people who visit Ranker.com. Now, I'll be completely honest with you. I looked at this list and I disagreed. I disagree with the list. Okay, disagree is a strong word. I agree with the shows they put on there, but I have issues with the shows that they put on there.
Because you're not attracted to the cast?
No, I'm very attracted to the cast. That's not the point. It's just they ranked certain shows higher than other shows. I'll give you one example. Number 21, and I had to put number 21 there. As I originally said, I was going to do 20, but I put number 21 because they put Mad Men as number 21. When you hear some of the other shows that are in the top, I know, right? You have John Hamm, Christina Hendricks.
That's such a hot show.
That show oozes sex, right? And to put it as 21, yes.
I'm going to say, who's in the male category? Who's hot on that show besides John Hamm? Oh, the gray-haired guy.
John
he's
Slattery,
hot.
Of course.
Who else is hot? Everyone else is a bit weak.
Well, yeah, a little bit. But on the female side, you got Christina Hendricks. I mean, yeah. Christina Hendricks alone covers that entire, but you have a whole bunch of
the blonde, that January woman.
January Jones. There you go. So they all come through. But 21. Anyway, so the competition I wanted to do is I spoke to you ladies offline and I asked you to take a guess. What do you think is in the top 20? So as our guest, Ariana, if you don't mind, pick a show. Tell me if you think it's in the top 20 and I'll tell you if it is and what number it is.
Right. By the way, I'm going to nail this.
You think?
I'm only watching TV to see attractive people at this point. I don't care about the storyline. You talked about the storyline on West Wing for like 10 minutes. Uh-huh. I could not care less. I'm just in love with Joss Liman. That's all
Fair
I'm saying.
Enough. Fair enough.
I don't even know what to start with because I'm scared if I pick something, it won't be on the list. Okay, I'm going to go with Grey's Anatomy, but the earlier seasons when everyone was young and attractive.
We don't have to pick seasons. You just basically pick a show.
Right,
and
but
I'll
I'm just
you.
Saying I don't want people to think I find the current cast attractive. I do not. I think the cast from seasons 1 to 3, very attractive.
You think?
Yeah, Dr. Burke.
Okay. What's the, Katherine Heigl?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's pretty.
I have my issues with Katherine Heigl, but objectively speaking, she's a very attractive lady.
She is. As a blonde myself, I don't particularly like when people have a yellow blonde tone to their hair.
Okay.
And she is quite yellow blonde. But apart from that, yes, great, wonderful.
Isaiah Washington. I mean, his politics aside, he is an attractive looking man.
Oof.
I'm just saying.
I love him.
Not on the list.
I'm sorry, what?
Grey's Anatomy is not in the top 20. So, yep. Laura, would you like to have a go?
Okay. ER.
ER comes in number 17. You have George Clooney, Ming-Na Wen, Eric LaSalle, Noah Wiley, Goran Visnich. Anyway, George Clooney alone makes that show entirely sexy. So yes, you're on the scoreboard. You've got number 17. Ariana, would you like to throw another one?
Oh my God! Like I my confidence is completely shattered now.
You know what? I'll help you out with one of them. Melrose Place came in number 7.
So, I mentioned this to you upstairs, so yeah. I mean, like, I feel like I got like a pseudo point there.
No, not really, because you didn't get to say it on the show. it's like scoring a goal before the match starts. That doesn't count.
It
doesn't count. So so Melrose Place number 9, Heather Locklear, Alyssa Milano, Lisa Rinna. So great show.
Yeah.
Would you like to give another one?
I'm going to go with my top pick from upstairs, which you questioned me on.
Which was?
I think Friends is going to be on the list.
You think Friends is going to be on the list?
Yeah. I think if we think back to the 90s, we all had the Rachel.
Yeah, we had Rachel. We had Courtney Cox.
Jennifer Aniston. All in love with one of the boys at one point or another.
Okay, Matt LeBlanc was probably the sexiest on the in terms of the men. But then David Schwimmer.
Yeah, but if you recall, back when Ross loved Rachel, we all loved Ross. Like, this was remember he got that movie Paul Bearer or something? Like, who is writing the movie Paul Bearer and putting
Paul Bearer.
Ross in that movie if Ross wasn't heartthrob, right?
I have to admit, yes, I remember Paul Bearer, and you are right. Friends came in number 14.
Ooh.
So, okay, Laura, back to you. Do you want to throw another shot?
Game of Thrones.
You think Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Who's in Game of Thrones that you would consider hot? Kit Harington, I'll help you.
Kit Harington.
Okay. Emilia Clarke. Okay.
Emilia Clarke.
Lena Headey.
Well, yeah, I mean, can you name me someone who isn't attractive?
Sean Bean? Well, no, actually, I take that back. Sean Bean is very attractive. He's a very handsome
man. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough. Game of Thrones came in number 3. So well done.
I think this list is rigged.
You think? Well, you think this list is rigged?
It's rigged to my taste in TV.
Yeah, because Laura's got 2. You got 1.
I do have Melrose Place. I just want to point out that I said Melrose Place upstairs.
You don't have Melrose Place. Melrose Place was a shot that you made outside of the game. So that is off the list. Do you want to take another guess?
I know how this game works now. I understand.
This is all American
Steal
TV
my best
shows,
material,
right?
And then
that is one of my gripes, and we'll come to that in a second. We'll have 2 more rounds, and then I'll go through the list. So
right. I'm going to say Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek?
Have you seen Pacey?
Joshua Jackson is a very attractive man. I grew up, I didn't say grew up, in my formative years, Dawson's Creek was pretty much something that I watched constantly. Joshua Jackson, you had Katie Holmes, Michelle Williams, who's now basically excelled and she's racking up all Oscar nominations and so on because she's a brilliant actor. And then James Vanderbeek, who kind of went down into his own.
Yeah, we all loved Dawson in season 1 and then he started crying and then it never, you know, recovered from there.
There's that meme of him just constantly crying now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dawson's Creek, not on the list.
No!
Nope, I was.
Well, at least I still have Melrose Place.
Well, no, you don't have Melrose Place, so that's on the list. Laura, you want to have a go?
How about Lost.
You had to think about that one. Lost had a huge, huge cast list. And I have to admit...
Surely at least 10 of those people who are stuck on that island.
At least 10 of them. So someone like Matthew Fox, maybe Yung Jin Kim, Evangeline Lilly, Josh Holloway. I mean, Sawyer was sexy.
Yes, right? Sir,
that man. He was, yep, absolutely. That is number 18 on the list. So well done, Laura.
The only thing I never understood about that show.
What else is on that show? I mean, what else is on this list?
That's coming at 18.
This is
the problem with Lost, though. They put Evangeline Lilly in that tank top.
Yes.
Which made you think the entire show, where is she shaving her armpits? You know what I mean? If they put her in a normal t-shirt, I wouldn't have thought about it once.
I'll be completely honest with you. That thought never crossed my mind while watching that show.
Well, then maybe that's why I didn't think they were a hot cast. Because I was like, she's clearly hairy under there. This isn't working out.
But what do you mean, how did she shave her armpits? They had stuff to shave their armpits. They were on a plane. You have like, you know, what's it called? Sanitary packets and
razor blades. Not razor blades on a plane, remember? Blades, my friend.
But
this was pre-2000 and...
No, it wasn't pre-2001. It was 2000.
It was like just that time, wasn't it?
I'm sure you have... You don't have
like
razor
I'm
blades.
Sure some people had razors in their checked luggage, which they would have like broken into over the course of But like... Come on, like those blades dull, you know?
Yeah, still. It's not like she was there for a very long time, but obviously she'd see to personal hygiene pretty quickly where she could actually shave and get, before it got
basically,
to a point where there's a dreadlock
on her arm. I don't have time to shave my
armpits
and I live in like downtown London and like have nothing but, you know, razors at my disposal. But no, it's not a priority for me. So I don't know how she could have possibly been thinking about shaving her armpits when she was like struggling to like get away from polar bears and like the others and all this stuff. But why they put her in a tank top is beyond me.
If CJ Craig can walk and talk Aaron Sorkin dialogue, then she can run from polar bears and shave her armpits at the same time. So, so would you want to have another go? We'll have one more round and then I'll go through the list.
I'm going to just, like, not that I like the show, not that I find these people attractive, I'm going to go with Baywatch.
Baywatch. Let's see. Are we talking early Baywatch or more towards late 90s Baywatch? Just Baywatch in general?
Just Baywatch.
So
Pamela
David
Anderson,
Hasselhoff.
Canadian, by the way.
Pamela Anderson, Yasmin Bleeth.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Baywatch. Is that your first point? No, second point on the board.
How dare you. How dare you.
Baywatch came in at number 5. Laura, would you like to have the last go before we go through the list?
Sex and the City.
Sex and the City. So you had Sarah Michelle Gellar. You had who else was on that show?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I recognize the pick. The names. You just the faces.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah. Who did I say? Sarah Jessica Miller.
You said Sarah Michelle Gellar of
fame. No, Sarah Jessica Parker.
I know all their names, but like Samantha Miranda Carey.
Yeah.
Charlotte.
Unfortunately, not on the list. For some reason, it was not considered as top 20 hottest shows between 1989 and 2013. Here's the actual list.
Okay, yeah. Tell us the list. Is it full of porn or what?
Well.
Come on.
Here's the list. You had Mad Men at number 21, right? You had Firefly at 20. I mean, come on. Firefly needs to be much higher than that. You then had 90210. Not Beverly Hills 90210. 90210.
Like the new 90210.
The new 90210. Right. The one in 2008.
Right.
So that had Sinead, Grimes, Beach, Tristan Wilde, etc. You had Lost, came in number 18. You had ER, came in number 17. Smallville came in at number 16.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Tom Welling, Alison Mack, Kirsten Kirk. I mean, okay. I like that. Jensen Ackles as well was in that show for a while. Then number 15, True Blood. Anna Paquin, Alexander Skarsgård. I mean... I'm sorry, Ariana.
True Blood's about vampires?
Yes, but
you've lost me.
So you haven't seen the show, but
I'm judging it. Yeah,
but you know of Alexander Skarsgård?
Well, I mean, I think was he in a PETA ad or maybe? I don't know. Did he have blood on him? No, it was the blood thing. It was True Blood. Yeah, it was all press related. Yeah, I guess. I think I've seen him maybe.
And you didn't think he was attractive?
Yeah, I mean, sure, fine, whatever.
Look, I'm a straight man, but that, he anyway, I've lost my place on the list because of Alexander Skarsgård. And I'm proud to say that. That's fine. Number 14, Friends, as you said.
Yes.
Number 13, Nip Tuck. Do you remember the show Nip Tuck?
Yeah, I hear that was attractive.
Well, to be honest,
No! way. No way. Get that off the list right now.
It was about plastic, you know, plastic surgery. So they, you know, set in LA, so they had to have a lot of beautiful people in there. So it was number 13. Buffy the Vampire Slayer came in as number 12.
Desperate Housewives? Is that on there?
No, I checked. I actually looked for Desperate Housewives. That came about 25.
Okay, carry on.
Number 11, Charlie's Angels. So you had Farrah Fawcett, Jaclyn Smith, and Kate Jacobs. Number 10, the original Beverly Hills 90210.
Mm-hmm,
and number 9,
mm-hmm.
Gossip Girl.
Yeah, I can see that.
You can see that? Okay. I never watched that show, actually. Check it out.
Can we just go back to Beverly Hills 90210 for a second? Jason Priestley, Canadian. Just want to point that out again. Every time there's a Canadian mentioned, you have to point it out.
We'll circle back to this, but this is the second time you've mentioned you've given a shout out to a Canadian person. So,
yeah, just completely random. I just love the country.
Okay, fair enough. That's good. Not that you're from there or anything like that. No, not at all. You're not biased in any way, shape, or form. Number 8, Pretty Little Liars. That's a show I've seen banded around. I think it's about some teenage girls.
It's about teenage girls, and one of them sleeps with their teacher. And I know that's like the fantasy that, like, you know, you are hot enough as a 16-year-old to sleep with a grown up. But no, in real life, that teacher is so massively attractive. He's not sleeping with a 16-year-old. He's sleeping with a hot 21-year-old.
Fair enough. Well, it came number 8. There was number 8. Number 7 was Melrose Place. You mentioned that before the show.
That's right. I got that.
Number 6, The Originals. I know a large number of women out there that are probably saying this should be much higher. The Originals. Again, you're pulling a face. That's because it's a vampire demons type show. So
is it a current show?
It is a current show. It's been since 2000. I'll take a stab. I'll say 2011.
I have never ever heard of it.
Have you heard of a show, Vampire Diaries?
Yes.
We'll come to Vampire Diaries in a second. So number 5, Baywatch. Number 4, Supernatural. Jensen Ackles. Oh, he's a very attractive guy. Right. I mean, he's no Alexander Skarsgård, but he's an attractive man himself. number 3, Game of Thrones, as you mentioned. Number 2, and this one, I was like, what are you talking about? Charmed.
I don't know, Alyssa Milano. Her tits are great.
Okay, you mentioned Alyssa Milano, right? That's one person. Rose McGowan, 2. Shannon Doherty, yeah. But number 2?
Yeah.
I mean,
like I said, I think the list is really biased. I think a lot of maybe frustrated boys are writing into this website.
But this is the thing. You're saying frustrated boys, right? If you said frustrated boys, I'd have expected Firefly to be far higher on that list. You had Gina Torres, Summer Glau, Morena Baccarin. I mean, come on. These are really attractive. Anyway, we won't get it. And number 1, Vampire Diaries. I said I was going to come back to that
one. Yeah.
Nina Dobrev and some other very attractive people on that show. So Vampire Diaries basically had a spin-off. Oh, there was a spin-off from Vampire Diaries called The Originals. So some characters from that went to do their own show, and it is a big hit. I've never seen the show myself. I know a lot of people who have. They tell me it's a great show. So I take their
word
for it.
There's a lot of vampires in this list, isn't there?
Yes, there's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Four vampire shows.
At least, yes. So
vampires are beautiful.
That's what I hear. I prefer werewolves myself.
For beauty?
Yes. Why not?
A bit of fur, why not? Okay.
Just, yeah, a little bit of.
I'll remember that.
I'll apologize for this, Ariana.
Yeah.
You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on 104.4 FM, Resonance 104.4 FM. My name is Marcus Iacco.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
And with us tonight is our special guest, production manager, Ariana Ryan. Now, I was going to do a segue, and I had to stop myself to do that little name tag for the show because we talked werewolves, and you said, are werewolves sexy? And I said, yeah. And you said, it's hairy sexy? And I was going to say, yes. But in my head, I was already queuing up to introduce our guest and get to talk to our guest.
That's all right. Your guest thinks hairy is somewhat sexy.
Okay, fair enough. That's okay. Fine. That's a much, much better save than me turning around and saying, speaking of hairy, our guest is Ariana Ryan.
And we've been talking about the disappearing razor blades.
Absolutely.
Lost.
Yeah, there
so
we go.
There seems to be a theme here. So, Ariana Ryan, you are a production manager.
Oh, yeah.
For the uninitiated, please tell us what that is.
So, you know how there's a bunch of cool jobs involved with TV and film and all that?
Yes, we do.
I hire those people to do those cool jobs and then just sit back and be really grouchy about budgets and stuff like that.
Okay.
So that's the job, basically.
Oh, so
just
you
organizing everything, being really miserable about it, and making everyone's life really awful on set.
So essentially, your boss is the producer?
depends. There's a whole level of producers. There's exec producers and series producers and assistant producers and associate producers and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes you hire those people and sometimes those people hire you and sometimes those people are senior to you and sometimes you're a senior to those people. So maybe is the right answer.
Okay, fair enough.
So basically you get to guard all the doors, you get to hold all the keys,
yes.
You get to organize everything and you know where everyone is.
Yeah.
And what everyone is doing at all times.
Yes, correct.
Wow.
I know. But you don't get to make any fun creative decisions, which isn't the best. But you do get to travel sometimes and work really long hours, so not see those cities.
Yeah, you were mentioning your travel schedule is very hectic. So you think essentially you fly in, you get stuck indoors all day, and then you fly back out the next evening.
Yeah, but you know you do get to eat like local cuisine, which is fantastic. As you know, I do like to eat quite a bit. So like you get room service to your room and like binge eat there, maybe a few tears. Like it's really, you know, it's satisfying. No, my job's great. It's fine.
It must be quite exciting having such a deep inside knowledge of the projects that you work on, though, knowing so much about them,
yeah.
despite having to find your creative release elsewhere.
Yes, yeah, no, it's great. I love my job. It can be challenging, but I'm really organized. And if I have enough time, I'm really clever on email. There's a lot of negotiation, chatting to people. Basically, 90% of my job is flirting with people, which I like doing. So that's always good. But,
okay.
Yeah.
So if someone wanted to become a production manager, what would they have to do?
Well, I got into it because I wanted to sleep with celebrities.
Okay.
And I thought this was like hiring celebrities would probably be the easiest way to get them to want to sleep with you. And it's now been like 12 years and I've yet to sleep with a celebrity. So that's probably not the right route. But
yeah, maybe not. Because as a production manager, you tend to deal with the crew more than the actual
celebrities.
Yes,
correct, actually. Yeah, that wasn't briefed to me at the very beginning
of my
career.
Like
no, I didn't.
With the crew.
No, that's not. I mean, like, not to suggest that hasn't happened over the course of 12 years, but you know.
Oh,
blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
I'm completely lying. I've done
that. Yeah, of course not.
But I think the traditional route, people start as like PAs and they start production coordination and then they move into like becoming production managers and then you become a line producer and head of production and then hopefully like a director of production and then like a production exec and then you're like, you know, running a production company and everything's
okay.
Fantastic.
So what would you see your sort of career, I know this is like sort of slightly personal, what is your career trajectory from production manager? Where would you see yourself moving in that direction?
So I think next step is head of production. I'm actually doing a head of production role right now.
Oh, yeah.
I know. It's all really exciting. But yeah, like I think as you move up in production management, you deal less and less with people, which is unfortunate, and more with money.
Oh, okay.
Which is great if you like budgets, and I do, and I like Excel and all these things that sound really boring when you go on dates, but that's kind of like the progression.
It depends. If you go on a date with an accountant, then it's heaven,
it's a
right?
A match made in heaven.
Exactly. Mm. So what's
calling all accountants out there?
what competencies would I, if I were to say I want to apply for, I decide I want to pick that job right now, what competencies would I need to develop to be able to become a production manager?
You have to be massively organized.
Okay. So that's me out. So I'm done.
And me. Should we just go home?
Yeah. So that's sure. I know like five of our followers on Facebook are massively organized. So
well,
they
there
might
you
be
go.
Listening.
You also need to think really proactively. So
okay.
Like you kind of have to anticipate the problem from three days ago. From now,
okay.
And like fix that problem in advance, because in 3 days you'll have a brand new problem that you won't know how to fix yet.
Fair enough.
So it's just kind of figuring out what are all the problems and let's fix them now so that by the time you get to that problem, you can be dealing with something else. That sounds really silly, but being proactive is really important.
Oh my gosh, I feel like there should be a National Production Manager Appreciation Day or some kind of, is there a kind of industry award that acknowledges sort of particularly good production management in companies or anything? Or is it still something that we will have to campaign for in the future?
An unappreciated art form.
Yeah, no, there's no award.
Oh, I'll tell you what, before the end of the show, we're going to fashion something. I'm sure there's a bottle there. We can get something tied to it and we'll get you an award before you leave today.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
Our special guest today is the hardest working production manager that we know in the country, Arianna Ryan.
Hi.
that brings us to the next segment. Before we move into UK Top 5, we the new segment that we've been introducing recently, which is playing a tune from favorite soundtracks. Since we're doing a lot of TV heavy discussion today, I figured I'd bring a soundtrack from a TV show. The TV show is called Flight of the Conchords, and the song is called The Most Beautiful Girl in the Room. Enjoy.
yeah. Look around the room, I can tell that you are the most beautiful girl in the room. In the whole wide room. And when you're on the street, depending on the street, I bet you are definitely in the top three. Good-looking girls on the street, yeah.
Depending on the street,
ooh. And when I saw you at my mate's place, I thought, what is she doing at my mate's place? How did Dave get a hottie like that to a party like his? Good one, Dave.
Ooh, you're a legend, Dave.
I asked Dave if he's gonna make a move on you. He's not sure. I say, Dave, do you mind if I do? He says it doesn't matter, but I can tell it kind of minds. But I'm gonna do it anyway. I see you standing all alone by the stereo. I dim the lights down to very low.
Here we go.
You're so beautiful.
Beautiful.
You could be a waitress. You're so beautiful.
Beautiful.
You could be an air hostess in the 60s. You're so beautiful. You could be a part-time model. And then I see you with clear. I do my moves, I do my dance moves.
That was Flight of the Conchords, the most beautiful girl in the room. Now, one of the reasons why I brought this particular song up, because I love the show Flight of the Conchords. It's about a folk duo from New Zealand who basically sing folk songs. And you need to go and listen. Just go on Spotify, find Flight of the Conchords, listen to their stuff. And I saw on Twitter, I think we posted on our Twitter page about their new show. They're doing a show. They're bringing it back to the UK sometime next year in January, I believe. So go.
Do we have our tickets yet, Marcus?
I'm waiting for it to go online. I think it's going online on Friday, the 27th, is when it's going to be released. I'm going to be front row buying that ticket. I'll get as many tickets as I can so I can get space for me and whoever wants to come with me. And I'm just going to put my arms out like that. And even if no one comes with me to the show, I will be there by myself and I will be singing along to Jenny. It's one of their songs. They have so many good songs. They've got Jenny. They got Most Beautiful Girl in the Room, you just heard. Hippopotamus versus Rhinoceros, Robots. Very, very good. It's very funny. You should go listen to it. That's Flight of the Conchords, Jermaine Clement and Brett McKenzie.
I'm sold.
You're sold. There you go. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
And with us in the room is our special guest, like I keep saying, the hardest working production manager that we know, Ariana Ryan.
Can I just clarify here? I don't know how many production managers you know. I know some like hard working production managers, and I don't want them to think that I'm trying to steal their thunder.
I will let you know that I know two production managers.
Oh, shoot. The other person is like...
And you, out of those two... no, I'm kidding. No, I know a number of... I know a number of production managers, and they do a very hard job. But... I haven't had this conversation with you and speaking to you before we went online. I know that your job is very hectic and so don't shrug that. Don't shrug that accolade. You are the hardest working production manager in this studio.
Correct.
So that's good.
Correct.
Excellent. Amen to that. And just before we go on to our next segment where we talk about the UK box office top five, I just want to give a quick shout out to some of our lovely listeners who have been talking to us this week. James Noble from Kent, Richard from Trinidad, Evelina from Sydney, and last but most certainly not least, our wonderful, talented guest from last week, the The Renaissance man, Daniel Taylor.
Daniel Lawrence Taylor, the creator, writer, and co-star of Time Wasters on ITV2. If you're not watching the show, you should go and catch up on it on ITV Hub. It's a great show. It's a great British comedy, Time Wasters. It's about a jazz quartet from South London who get transported back in time to the 1920s Britain. It's very good. Four black people, three men, one girl, and it's an amazing show.
Are there one guy's hot?
You watch it. I won't make that decision. I won't make that decision for you. You should go and watch it, and the next time we speak, I'll ask you if you think the black guys are hot.
Oh, right. There's just so much beautiful stuff on there. They're on their fourth adventure now.
Yes.
And each one is sort of a standalone adventure by itself. And I'm quite looking forward to what kind of scrapes they're going to get into next week.
Yeah, there are six episodes in total. They're up to episode four. So if you've missed the four episodes, go on ITV Hub so you can watch you can catch up on it before the last two episodes in the next coming weeks. Anyway, let's move on to our next segment, which is UK Box Office Top 5. Okay, so box office top five. Number five, The Death of Stalin. Now, this one sort of it didn't creep in. It was adverts for it, and I wanted to go see this. I missed my opportunity to go see this, but I want to see this. This has Jason Isaacs. Hello to Jason Isaacs. Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor, Rupert Friend. It's Ian. I'm going to mess his name up. Ian. I've completely lost his name. He's the creator of The Thick of It, In the Loop, Armando Iannucci. That's it. I was trying to swap the names around.
Armando Iannucci. What a lineup!
I know. It's pure satirical gold from what I hear. I've been reading a number of press about it just to prepare myself to go watch it. I was trying to find, it's currently 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. For those of you who don't know Rotten Tomatoes, it's a website that collates different critiques from various critics and regular people who watch movies. And if they can rate it in the cumulative sum or average rather, and it's above 60%, it's considered fresh. If it's below 60%, it's considered rotten, hence Rotten Tomatoes. It's currently 96, which means it's fresh. I looked for a negative review. There was someone who gave a negative review on it, which is what made it come down from 100% to 96, and they gave it 3 out of 5 stars. And their reason for why it was terrible was because it wasn't a good enough reason, if you understand what I mean. So I'm definitely
some people just
that.
Really like posting bad reviews.
Do you think they did that to get it knocked down from 100? Like they were going to be the one bad review. Everyone's going to find that review.
Possibly. There is a critic called Armand White who's famous for doing that. He's a contrarian. He's famous for giving what are considered excellent movies bad reviews. Toy Story. He hates Toy Story because in his opinion, Toy Story is terrible because it promotes kids buying toys, whereas the Transformers movies are ballet of mechanics. Those are his words. So that's what he is. He's a contrarian. So that's I wouldn't be surprised. He zones in on certain films that everyone is in general consensus saying it's a great movie. He'd like to jump in and be the naysayer about that particular movie.
This isn't a movie that I would have thought would be something that you'd go and watch in its first weekend. It seems like something that I would definitely pick up as a DVD or maybe a couple of weeks into the run to see for something to go and see with my friends. But judging from the things that have mostly been in the top five for the last month or so, which are, you know, big blockbuster action movies or... Yeah. This one seems at least somewhat more serious and slow burn-y.
Well, we'll see. I don't know myself. I will go and watch it this weekend and I'll let you know. That's number five, The Death of Stalin. Number four is Happy Death Day.
So, and you've seen this one, right?
I have seen this one. So this is, we're coming up to Halloween, so we're now getting horror movies that are coming out. And this is basically it's a slasher pick. And it's a teenage slasher pick. It's about this girl who wakes up on her birthday, follows through a whole series of events leading to the end of the day where she gets killed by a masked stalker. But as soon as she gets killed, she wakes up again and does the whole thing all over
again. So it's Groundhog Day, but with murder.
Absolutely. It's Groundhog Day, but with murder. That's a very good way of summarizing it, because that's what they do. In fact, they mentioned that in the movie, which I as soon as I heard that, I was like, you don't do that. We know it's Groundhog Day. You don't have to reference it. I thought it was a good movie. It was a good concept. It was funny. The deaths were inventive, and it's funny in certain parts. I have my issues with it, but I would definitely recommend people go and watch it.
Do you think it's going to make our Halloween Horror Movie Hall of Fame?
No, it won't, because when we're at Halloween, since we have a Halloween show next week, and we're having a guest who we already had on the show, Michael Maria, is making a return. I'm planning something for that, so this definitely won't enter that Halloween Hall of Fame. It's not that strong to go into it. It's a funny, scary movie, but it's not. It'll be forgettable by December.
What's that movie where people die? Oh God, what a stupid way to anyway, but you know that movie.
People die.
Poltergeist. James
you know that
Bond
movie, and it's like this inevitability. They're all supposed to take that flight. They get off the flight, the plane crashes, and they all
the English Patient.
No, come on, like there's the flight and they all
Final
get off.
Destination.
Yeah, Final Destination. The most horrifying movie you've ever seen. Oh. There's always like ways to die that like you have pretty much been in 100 times. It sounds like that, like this woman just keeps getting killed in all these different ways.
Yes, it does. Final Destination, if we're talking about, as you mentioned, Halloween Hall of Fame, I would go with Final Destination as a more of a horror movie compared to Happy Death Day. Happy Death Day is more of a comedy with horror elements to it, because there are no real stakes, because she wakes up the next day, so anyone who dies, you know that all she has to do is just kill herself and she loops back everything, you know, back
to
the beginning.
It's a joyous thought, isn't it?
So I guess. So that's the reason why it's not really a scary movie, but it has a scary element to it. But I definitely recommend go and see Happy Death Day, which is currently at number 4.
And then there's the Lego Ninjas.
Number 3, Lego Ninjago. Now, okay, last week I was excited to go see this movie because of the cast behind it. You had Kumail Nanjiani, you had Michael Peña, Dave Franco, Luis Theroux, playing Lord Garmadon. I did see this movie, and it's okay. It's in the same vein as Lego Movie and Lego Batman. So if you like those movies, you will like this one. However, I liked those two movies, and I did like this one, but not as much, because the jokes weren't as punchy. There was a lot on screen. Lord Garmadon, Louis Theroux. Is it Louis? Not Louis. This is Justin Theroux, not Louis Theroux. Louis Theroux is someone completely different. Justin Theroux.
The one who's married to Jennifer Aniston.
Yes, him. Yeah. He plays Lord Garmadon. And for me, he's the best character in it. Jackie Chan is in it as well. And I would watch Jackie Chan in anything. Those two are the best things about that particular, Lego Ninjago movie. I would say definitely take your kids to go see it, especially if your kids like the Lego Ninjago series. It's very loosely based on the series itself, but it's funny in the way Lego Movie was funny. If you didn't like Lego Movie, then you won't like this.
I'm sorry, this is a movie about Legos and ninjas?
Yes, it's a movie about Lego ninjas.
Are the ninjas made out of Legos?
Yes.
Yeah.
How do they move like in the?
Well, animated Lego ninjas.
You work in the television industry, and you are asking.
I know the secrets. I was just bringing that up to like spark the conversation. I know how they move. I know all about it. It's okay, guys. We can move on.
It's okay. I'll tell you later. Okay.
I have to say that I have to give a special shout out here to one of the box office losers of last week, which was My Little Pony, the movie.
That came in number 7, I think. It just fell out of our list.
It should have taken the place of the Lego Ninjas, I think. Right. I went to see it on Sunday, and all day I was singing these unbelievably catchy songs from My Little Pony, the movie. And now I just feel awesome.
Fair enough.
Awesome.
Well, unfortunately, it didn't fall into the top 5.
Not so awesome.
Yeah. What was in number 2 was Geostorm, which is the Gerard Butler's latest movie. I haven't seen that.
I don't know how this got to number 2 with the unbelievable number of awful reviews it's had. I mean, have you read a good review of this movie?
No, I haven't. But here's the thing: what I've discovered is that critics do not really have an effect on box office revenue. Transformers never really get good reviews. They rarely get good reviews, but yet they take in a lot of money. Geostorm has Gerard Butler, who is very attractive. He's a commanding on-screen presence. Also, it's a movie about, you know, a storm, right? It's a disaster movie.
Do you think these movies are just like fodder for reviewers to coin new,
of course, of
horrible
course.
Terms? I mean, can I just read you a bit of the Telegraph review, which I thought was particularly good?
Please do.
It says, Geostorm's disasters are just barrages of drab anonymous digi porridge with a very occasional unhinged flourish thrown in, such as a stadium that's struck by lightning and immediately explodes. Now, if you were a reviewer, wouldn't you just think, okay, right, stick a fork in me and turn me over. I am done for the year. Just give me holiday for the rest of the year. That is the best thing I've written all year.
Just as you'll have reviewers who will jump on a great movie to give it a positive review, to be the ones to say, yeah, I championed this movie, you know, jump on the bandwagon. That's the same thing for terrible movies coming out. As soon as a movie that looks, you know, movie like Geostorm or the next Transformers movie that comes out, or I don't know, any movie that comes out that usually gets critically panned, the same thing happens, but in reverse. You get everyone jumping on the bandwagon to slay the dragon. And as you said, come up with the new catchphrase to describe how awful it is. And then you also have the reverse. You'll have the people like Armand White who decide to actually defend it, who will try and do the reverse and say, no, actually, I think this film in 10 years' time will be a forgotten classic and so on.
This is one bit of digi porridge that I'm definitely going to put on my to watch on long haul flights list.
Fair enough.
It's one of those.
Do you want to watch that when you're on a plane? No? Do you want to watch a disaster movie while you're on a plane?
Absolutely. As long as it's not an aeroplane disaster movie, I'm okay with that.
Fair enough.
There are rules to what things you can watch on planes and feel okay about it. And I'll share mine with you in a couple of weeks when I come back from my next trip away.
Fair enough.
Can discuss them on.
Well, that was Geostorm at number two. And number one was Blade Runner 2049, which you've now seen, right?
I have seen it. And I think really, who hasn't seen it now? It was a great movie. There were lots of brilliant things about it. I agree with a fair amount of people that it did feel like it moved quite slowly in places, and some of the narrative hinge points seemed to just be a little bit thin. You know, why did he decide to change his mind at this point?
Sure.
But I'm just splitting hairs, really. I had a lovely night out seeing it.
We'll see. Also, Gordon.
Can I just mention that Ryan Gosling's Canadian? That's it.
I was waiting for you to say that. So that was number one. We'll see if it's number one next week. You are listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
And our special guest tonight is Ariana Ryan. So we're going to move to our big segment for today. We're going to try and rush this one because I know we only have about 13 minutes left. It is our top five film and TV discussion. So, picture the scenario. The city is rife with crime and lawlessness. Crooks and crims of all shapes, sorts, and sizes are running roughshod over the land, with corruption creeping all the way up to City Hall on Capitol Hill. And the only person who can bring justice back to our fair city is you. Only you can reestablish law and order, and it is with that which you have been tasked. But you need inspiration. You need guidance. You need to see the right way to go and the pitfalls to avoid. As the immortal philosopher Tracy Morgan once said, how the F you gonna know how to be great if you don't study greatness? Look at the game tape! And so you do. You gather game tapes of all your favorite cop TV shows. But it's not just about protecting, serving, and keeping order. Oh no. There's also the judicial system to think about too. You've got to prosecute the criminals, and they need representation. So you gather game tapes of all your favorite legal TV shows. And now you've got to match them up. Which brings us to our top five film and TV discussion for today's show. That was long. What we're doing
that's
is
fantastic.
Thank you very much. You take your top five favorite combination of cop and legal show, mesh them up together, the ones that complement each other. Let's hear your choices. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson.
So we'll start with our guest. What is your number five and number four cop and legal show mashup?
Oh, Lord, this was hard because it turns out I don't watch cop shows, so I've kind of done detective shows. I don't know what I'm doing. Five, I'm going to say L.A. Law.
Okay,
top legal show from the 80s, 90s. I'm sure we've all seen
it. I've definitely seen a few episodes of that.
Yeah. And I'm going to say Cops, which I think is also based in L.A., just running down with criminals. I'm also going to put Judge Judy in there in terms of an L.A. spin to things because, you know, she deserves a shout-out.
The two of them work, so you got Cops and L.A. Law.
And Judge Judy.
That's good. So that's your number five. What's your number four?
Oh, God, what is my number four? I'm going to say, okay, so this is kind of cheating, but Law and Order for the cop side of things.
And Law and Order for the legal side of things.
And also The Good Wife. And my connection here is Mr. Big, who's on both shows, season one of Law & Order as a detective, and then is Peter Florek on The Good Wife.
He looks so good as a lawyer. Just even better than he does as a businessman,
as
Mr. Big.
He's so massively hot, isn't he? Like, even though he's cheating on his wife and it's a big disaster.
He's cheating on his wife, he's cheating on his girlfriend, he's cheating on his business associates. I don't care. I'll still take him.
Peter Florek and The Good Wife. So, Laura, what's your number five and your number four?
My number five is Luther for a police show.
Yeah, very good show.
And The Good Fight.
And The Good Fight. The Good Fight is a spin-off from The Good Wife. Also, so already we've already had Good Wife that's sitting
we've
in
had
number
Mr. Big,
five.
We've had Idris Elba.
What is your number four?
He actually will appear again in the...
really?
Maybe. He might appear again.
What's your number four?
My number four is Life on Mars.
Oh, that's
John Sim in the 70s with lots of horrible, macho, nasty, ugly.
And Philip Glenister, good show. And so, what's the legal counterpart to that one?
The legal counterpart to that is Eli Stone.
Oh, I loved Eli Stone. That's Johnny Lee Miller. It's Eli Stone. He's a corporate lawyer. He's a high flying corporate lawyer that discovers he has, I think, brain tumor or something, and the tumor sort of causes. Visions seem to have.
Well, that's another link between them, I thought, because John Sim in Life on Mars is actually in a coma.
Yes, he is in a coma.
Or he's back in time, or he's in a coma, or he's back in time. And maybe he's imagining the whole 70s experience thing, even though he falls in love and all kinds of stuff happens to him.
I like that mashup. That's pretty good. That's pretty strong.
Couldn't imagine him doing pro bono, though. John Sim.
Yeah, of course you would, because he's in the 70s, he starts trying to bring a good sense of justice to the police department. So yeah, I think that's a very good pairing. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With our guest, Ariana Ryan. What we're talking about right now is our top five favorite cops and legal show mashup. Do we have any, I don't think we, because I don't think many people actually sent in any of their mashups, because this was a little bit more, this was a risk that we're taking. So we didn't get many suggestions on either Twitter or Facebook.
Well, in fact, Richard from Trinidad did.
And
his list we will repost on our Facebook page straight after the show.
Excellent.
So we'll be able to compare all four of our choices.
And if you do want to send us a message on Twitter, it is STB_ResonanceFM, or on Facebook is simply Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM.
And what's your number five and number four, Marcus?
My number five and number four is Brooklyn Nine-Nine with Adam Sandberg and Terry Crews, and the legal side of things is Boston Legal with what's his name? William Shatner.
Canadian.
Yes, and James Spader. James Spader, who is a spin-off show from The Practice, but I preferred Boston Legal because Boston Legal was awesome.
Yes. Do you remember Eugene Young from The Practice? Do you remember that man?
I remember the show very well. I remember the show very well. I preferred Boston Legal. What is your number three and number two?
My number three, from the detective cop side, Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to say from the legal side, Matlock, and the connection's a bit tenuous, but I used to watch both those programs at my grandparents' house, so that's why.
It's a good combination.
It's a great combination.
I picture the both of them on a date, just solving crimes and getting the right guy.
Is Matlock still alive? Like, I mean, the character's probably dead, but is Andy Griffith still alive?
No, I think he's gone.
That's a good thing to bring up. I'm glad I did that.
It's all good. What's your number two?
My number two. Okay, have you guys seen The Grindr?
Yes, Rob Lowe.
Has that been canceled?
It has.
Okay, well, that's a fantastic show. I think it was really funny, really like punchy. The lyrics, the dialogue, all this.
It was lyrical.
There you go. And my detective counterpart would be Veronica Mars, which again, writing, the acting, all wonderful, exciting, really attractive people. Mm-hmm. We've got Logan Eccles, who you remember dated Veronica Mars. Again, that's why I'm interested in the show. So that's my number one,
Three and two. Well done. Laura, what are your three and two?
My number three was... I found it quite hard to find a legal counterpart for this, but my number three cop show was Bosch, which I fell in love with. I came fairly late to the party, but then had a massive binge watching spree and got completely underneath the skin of loads of the investigations and felt like really a part of it. And I felt like part of the trial that was going on too. So I think I might just use that as my cop and legal.
No, that works. That works fine. It works.
He works as a cop, even though he's supposed to be on gardening leave.
Yep.
Bosch
is Titus Welliver. If you want to see the show, it's on Amazon. It's a very good show. Okay, that's good.
All of the current series are on there now.
Yeah. Yep. That's your number three, right?
That is.
What's your number two?
And this one was really led by my legal choice, which was Ally McBeal.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you watched as many episodes of Ally McBeal as I did. It was one of those. It was one of those TV shows that really appealed to certain age of girl whose parents were like, well, you can have doctor, you can have lawyer, or you can have the gutter. And this one made me feel a bit more friendly towards the lawyer profession until I realised that there were other options than the gutter.
Okay.
So Ally McBeal is my legal choice. And if I have to choose a cop to go with this, it would be The Job.
The Job. That's Dennis Leary. Dennis Leary, Keith David. Oh, I loved that show. It was so good. He's an alcoholic. He's an alcoholic everything. And it basically follows him and his crew while they investigate certain crimes, while you see him juggling it between his wife and his girlfriend. Loved that show. Ally McBeal was not just for girls. I loved Ally McBeal. I watched it right up until Robert Downey Jr. had to leave because of his drug issues. So that thank you for giving us your number three and number two. My number three, Luther. You've already mentioned Luther. It's gritty. It's UK.
Stars Idris Elba.
Stars Idris Elba. And Damages, which was Glenn Close. I felt those two. Damages, you should check it out. It's, I think, 5 seasons. John Goodman's in it. William Hurt is in it at different points. It's a great show. Those two work together very well. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
And our guest tonight is Ariana Ryan. The Atomic Drop has sent us a message on Twitter and has just put in one suggestion. Due South...
Yes.
Go on.
Yes.
Go on. Canadian.
Is it Canadian or is it just about Canada?
No, he is Canadian. Paul Gross.
Yeah, no, of course he's Canadian. I knew that.
He's a Mountie who comes from Canada to the whole point is he's follow. He comes.
I get the premise of the show, yes. But I don't know whether it was like a Canadian co-pro or whether like.
No, it was. Canadian co-production. The legal one he's matching up is Better Call Saul, which actually for me is my number two.
Oh, actually, that's inspired. Yep. That is inspired.
I that's my number two because I have The Shield as well as Better Call Saul. So we're going to speed this up a little bit more. So can you give us your number one, Ariana?
Yeah, so I don't know whether I mentioned, but I'm Canadian. And
you didn't
my
mention.
Number one legal show or any show is a show called Street Legal.
Oh, okay, from Canada.
Oh my God, it was on the air between 1987 and 1994 and it's just the best thing you've ever seen. And I don't really have a cop show to put with it, but the main character from Street Legal, when Street Legal got canceled, was put on a spinoff called Taking the Falls that was also on CBC. That show was terrible. It was quickly cancelled, but there you go.
Okay. Laura, what's your number one?
My number one is The Wire.
Oh, The Wire. I'll
and
match
The Good
you up.
Wife.
I'll match you up. That is exactly my number one pick as well. The Wire and The Good Wife.
Those... Okay, we're shaking hands now. We're shaking hands
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we're shaking hands. That's good. Now. Absolutely. It's a tie. It's great.
You're brilliant. You've got such good taste.
Oh, thank you very much. You have good taste too. So we're right on time now. We can finish off with our final segment, which is Netflix recommendations. Ariana, do you have any Netflix recommendations?
The only thing I'm going to say is don't bother with that Gaga 5'2" documentary. I watched that yesterday. It wasn't great.
Oh, fair enough. Laura, what about yourself?
This is not Netflix, it's Amazon, and it's Outlander. There was a double episode after a wait of 2 weeks this week. And whatever anyone says to you about that episode, whether that it's not good or that it's not worth it, they're wrong. It's brilliant. It's steamy. It's wonderful.
Okay. Well, I'll recommend on Amazon, Bosch. You mentioned it earlier today. That brings us to the end of this week's show. I would like to thank our guest, Ariana Ryan, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, not a problem. Next week is our Halloween special, where we'll have Michael Mario come back on the show. This has been Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.